From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of November 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson. She's right here in Champaign, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the seed industry is working hard to make sure GMO crops remain marketable once they go off patent. And Standard & Poor's is assessing the viability of ethanol production plants as an asset class in both Brazil and the United States. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll tell you about our December Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And as we close out our program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us to look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up on this day before Thanksgiving, a Wednesday afternoon. Futures finished the December contract in the soft red winter wheat at $8.45 and a quarter. Settlement price at a quarter of a cent higher. The March contract down three quarters at $8.59 and three quarters. And July soft red, the new crop at $8.51 and a half in its settlement price from Chicago, a penny and a quarter lower. The hard red settled $8.97 and a half in Kansas City, a penny and a half higher. December corn futures, a settlement here. 741 down 2 1/4. The March at 745 and a quarter down 2 cents. And the May futures on its settlement a penny lower at 742. July 731 and 3/4, a penny, or rather just a 0.5 cent lower. And the September futures up 3/4 on a settlement at 643 and 3/4. December futures of next year in the corn pit at $6.23 1/4, up 1/4 for the day. January soybeans $14.10 down 2 3/4. The March at 1395, a penny and a quarter lower. And the May contract, $13.75, down 4 cents. These are all closes and not settlement prices. July, $13.66 and 3/4, 5.5 lower. And the August soybeans at $13.44 and 3/4, down 4 and 3/4. November beans, a settlement price now just in, at $12.84 and 3/4, down 7 cents for the day. December bean meal at $4.28.30, down 1.30. December bean oil up 21 at $48.53. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Live cattle futures from the CME Group finished the nearby February contract at 131. 62 and a half settlement price, $1.10 higher. April futures there at 135, 62 and a half as well, $1.05 higher. And the feeder cattle, March contract 149, 97 and a half, up $1.50. The April at 151.40, up $1.45. February lean hogs, $87.12, a settlement price there, down 57 and a half cents. The outside markets show us the crude oil trading at $87.54 a barrel now, 79 cents higher. December RBOB gasoline at 274 and 8 tenths. That's the wholesale price, up 3 6 tenths. The spot month ethanol December futures, 237 and 8 tenths, just about 9 tenths of a cent lower. And the difference between the two is 37 cents. That's 4 1/2 cents wider than it was yesterday. December contract in the natural gas at $3.90 and 1/10 of a cent, up 6 9/10. And heating oil or diesel fuel on the afternoon at $3.07 and 3/10 of a cent, 3 1/2, or rather 4 tenths of a cent higher for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Yet this afternoon, sunny skies, a high of 56 on a south-southwest wind. At about 6 miles an hour tonight, mostly clear and 42. Tomorrow for Thanksgiving, increasing clouds. They'll give way to a 62-degree high with a south wind at 7 to 15, gusting all the way to 20 miles an hour. And then tomorrow evening, a 50% chance of showers. Mostly cloudy, a sky with a low of 39 degrees, a south-southwest wind at 8 to 11 miles an hour. They'll become westerly after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 15 miles an hour. Then on Friday, sunny skies, a high of 42, west winds at 9 to 17 Friday night, mostly clear, and 23. Drew Lerner will be here to look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated's Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois, is with us to take a look at the futures markets. Good afternoon, Jackie. How are you? Well, Jackie, let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the marketplace for the afternoon, because it's been really quiet as we take a look at Chicago and the things that have been happening over that half hour. Where do you want to start today?
Well, I just think in general, when you look at the market, it was pretty much of a yawner most of the day today. We started out pretty strong overnight, and as we came in, even with some sales to China, 120,000 metric tons on beans, 20,000 soy oil. And the minute that the pit opened up, you could just see that guys were anxious to get out of there if they could, and we turned a little more negative. As you know, at the end of the day, no matter when it is, but when we have a market day that's closed the next day, anybody who holds a seat or shareholder down there has to be flat their position. So if anybody who held a seat was leaving today, they had to get completely out. They can never owe any money, and they can't hold any positions through a holiday or through any closed day. And so you could kind of see just when they were leaving, because things turned negative. Then we kind of balanced off, and right here close to the close, we again saw some negative move, but very, very quiet. We held, you know, just below major resistance. We held above major support. And, you know, we do have option expiration on Friday in that shortened session, because the market's actually only going to trade from 9:30 until 12 o'clock. So I would imagine some of those guys will be back for that, but not much going on. It was just a very, very quiet day.
Likely that Friday will be a very, very quiet day as well.
Well, it's funny, because it has been in the past at times, and on other days it's been a pretty crazy day because of the fact that you do have such light volume. You can end up with some really major, major volatility. You know, last year on the day after Thanksgiving, we lost 4¾ cents on wheat, 16 on beans, and 6¼ on corn. So, although the week before Thanksgiving last year was really a nasty, nasty week, we were down on everything, where this week we've actually been up. And so let's hope that we maybe have an opportunity to follow through and have a good Friday.
What have farmers been asking you in the last day and a half?
Oh, they've been talking about the farm bill. You know, everybody's concerned about what's going to happen with the farm bill. And, you know, we were told before the election that as soon as the election was over, we'd see some work on it. And, of course, everybody's anxious. Nobody wants to see this go into, beyond the lame duck session, for good reason. We have a lot of freshmen coming in, probably have very little knowledge of what the, what the ag programs really are. And so I thought that John Scholl, who is the president of the American Farmland Trust, said it best in a lot of the articles that I read. And I'll just read you what he said. He's got four reasons why they should pass a five-year farm bill. One, Congress should pass a five-year farm bill for the sake of farmers and ranchers who are still hurting from the most severe drought in decades and need a measure of certainty. Two, they should pass a five-year farm bill to continue meaningful investment to protect farmland and safeguard sensitive landscapes through conservation programs. Three, they should pass a five-year farm bill to help ensure a safe, stable, and affordable food supply for all Americans. And four, and perhaps most importantly, they should pass a five-year farm bill to renew the faith of the American people that Congress is an institution, can function, can work together, and can lead. And amen to that.
And the undertone on all of that, and I know this from visiting with the folks at the Illinois Commodities Conference yesterday, I took the day off and went to Bloomington, was the idea that if they do not pass a farm bill in the lame duck session, that any farm bill they might pass once Congress comes back might quite likely not be nearly as palatable to most producers across the nation.
Well, that's true, and I think that goes again back to the fact that we have so many freshmen coming in, and the focus, if they don't take care of the fiscal cliff, and even after, if they do take care of the fiscal cliff right now, this is going to continue to come back, and most of their focus will be on that, so they're going to be looking to cut anywhere that they can and put riders onto these bills. So let's just hope that Congress does the responsible thing and gets it taken care of.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. Let's come back to the marketplace. I think you had some things to discuss about China because they were in the marketplace in a big way today, at least in terms of announcements.
Well, they were, and I think it's interesting. You know, we just finished their 10-year election. Every 10 years, they choose a new leader. And their new leader was really out talking big time. He's talking about urbanization and how he's very concerned over middle-income stagnation, which I think is a unique conversation to hear coming out of China. He's going to be in a little different circumstance than Hu was when he came in, because 51% of all the people now live in the city as of 2011, which I did not realize. That they said over 100 million people left from farming and actually went in to take part in factory work, which moved China into the second largest economy after took Japan's place, basically. And, you know, they've got a lot of challenges ahead of them. Their one child per family is going to really come back and get them now, because when you look at their workers, they consider the major part of their workers 15 to 24 years old, which I think is interesting, but they figure they're going to lose 62 million people in that age range over the next 15 years. So they have a lot to work on to be able to move forward the way that they really want to move forward. And I think it's funny because they're expecting a GDP growth rate of 7.7%. Wouldn't we be excited if we had that? You know, but when you listen to everybody talk about them, they say, oh, you know, things are just really terrible over there. Well, you know, they are doing a lot of different things to try and improve things. I think when you look at the fact that they've announced that they're not going to sell any more auction reserves, they're going to work to build their reserves. You know, they're doing a lot of the right things, I believe. But it's just interesting to see them. It appears that they're trying to move more in a democratic direction, or at least a very capitalistic type of direction.
This afternoon, you'll be in for Commodity Week. Our guest is Lockie Stevens. He is from Australia, happens to be a listener on the podcast of the program, but we've had some discussion with him. Mostly, we'll probably take wheat up with him. He's been kind enough to send a lot of his work out of Australia and about the wheat crop there to you. What did you see in it that you want to ask him about this afternoon? Have you taken much of a look at it?
Well, I've looked at it, Jimmy, between the wildness here today. I think that... What I'd really like to talk with him about is what his view is in terms of the entire world situation. You know, when he talked about the Black Sea wheat exports and the impact that's going to have as far as where these different countries are going to go to actually try and source wheat and the pricing on it, just to get some feeling for what he has. But I just want to hear what someone from down under what their viewpoint is, I guess, on the whole world wheat situation and where we sit in it.
Well, and I think, as luck would have it, Lockie is joining us at a time when we're really looking to the southern hemisphere, which provides not nearly as much wheat as the northern hemisphere, but is the margin. And the margin always makes the difference. It'll be fun to hear what he has to say, and their wheat crop's not been in very good shape.
No, not at all. And I thought it was interesting when he talked about the fact that, you know, they were able to sell a lot of wheat because they were much more competitive than what they are right now. And so it's just going to be really great to have such an opportunity. And that follows right through, Todd. I because we do have Thanksgiving tomorrow, I really want to express my thanks, you know, to God, my family, my friends, but also, you know, to WILL and to you and Dave for all the hard work that you do to give this, to get us great information and get us someone from Australia, where when we talk at 4:30 this afternoon, it'll be 9:30 a.m. there. And also to, you know, to all the listeners and supporters who really make it possible for you and I to talk every single week.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all the things you do for us, too.
You're welcome.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She's right here in Champaign County, man. We'll be in studio this afternoon. We're going to record Commodity Week early. Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities will be along on that one, as well as Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. You can find Commodity Week up on the website after about 6 o'clock this evening at willag.org. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
in agricultural news, the seed industry is working to prevent any trade issues when biotechnology traits begin to go off patent. The Biotechnology Industry Organization and the American Seed Trade Association have been working to develop the agreements known collectively as the Accord since 2010. Last week, BASF Plant Science, Bayer Crop Science, Dow AgroSciences, DuPont Pioneer, and Monsanto had signed the first part of the agreement called the Genetic Event Marketability and Access Agreement. That agreement is designed to manage all of the trade issues with post-patent products. The Standard and Poor's Rating Services says it continues to look favorably on investments in Central and South America aimed at helping sugar producers there expand and upgrade existing refining facilities. On the other side of the coin, S&P says that last summer's drought in the U.S. Corn Belt is likely to increase the financial risk for those interested in investing in corn-based ethanol production. Mexico's ambassador to the United States says he believes the country is currently negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement will be able to conclude those talks by the end of 2013. A key issue that will determine the pace of the TPP talks is how many additional countries may be added to the negotiations and at what point in the proceedings that might happen. Mexico and Canada recently became full TPP partners and will attend their first formal negotiating session in New Zealand on December the 1st. The farm and construction equipment maker Deere & Company says its fourth quarter net income rose 2.7% as it sold more farm gear at higher prices. Deere says it earned $687.6 million for the quarter, or $1.75 per share. Revenue rose 14% to $9.79 billion. The Moline, Illinois-based company predicted that sales would rise about 5% next year and be up 10% in the first quarter. It expects full-year 2013 net income of about $3.2 billion. Japan logged its fourth straight monthly trade deficit in October as the European debt crisis and strained business ties with China over a territorial dispute reduced exports. The Ministry of Finance said today that exports for the month fell 6.5% from a year earlier to $62.9 billion. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will record this afternoon. That's right, Wednesday afternoon. We're going to take the holiday off on Friday, well, tomorrow as well for Thanksgiving, too. Lockie Stevens from Australia will be here on the phone line, that is, to talk about the wheat crop in his nation. Should be a good program. You can find it up on the website at willag.org after about 6 p.m. tonight, Wednesday evening.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Normally, when I talk with you, I'm reporting on something the professors and extension specialists from the University of Illinois have explored, but this time around, I'm something of the expert. Each December, the Ag Economist, the Farm Doc team from Illinois, let me host their Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Now, I'm humbled and I'm grateful. These are extraordinary education events. I watch them 5 times as we make our way around the state of Illinois, and I learn something new each and every day. Personally, I think you should make your reservation right now, but let me tell you what you'll learn about during the December Illinois Farm Economic Summits. This last year, of course, has been a historic one. The drought that hit Illinois and most of the rest of the Corn Belt this summer was among the worst of the last century. Record high corn and soybean prices followed. On top of this source of volatility, agricultural policy remained very uncertain. The financial crisis in Europe continued, and the political turmoil in the Middle East was heightened even further. Understanding these sources of volatility and how to deal with the associated large risk is front and center in the minds of most producers. The December Illinois Farm Economic Summits, well, they're designed to help producers navigate these kinds of global and regional and local issues. Speakers from the Farm Doc team at the University of Illinois will explore the farm profitability outlook and management challenges from several perspectives, including the direction of prices, projected farm incomes, the biofuels mandates, and the tax reporting options on crop insurance, and the still-to-be-written farm bill, of course. The format for the meeting, as always, will be fast-paced, but allow plenty of time for questions from you. You can sign up today on the Farm Doc Daily website. The pre-registration cost is just $65. It's $75 if you just show up at the door the day of. We'll be in Champaign, December the 10th, at the I Hotel at the Center for Agriculture. That's the DeKalb County Farm Bureau building in Sycamore. On Tuesday, December the 11th, at the Best Western in Galesburg on the 12th. The Holiday Inn Mount Vernon Thursday, December 13th, and we'll wrap up in Bloomington on Friday the 14th at the Doubletree. The Illinois Farm Economic Summit. If you're involved in agriculture, you should register today on the Farm Doc Daily website, and I'll see you in December.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Well, this is the closing market report on a Wednesday afternoon, the day before Thanksgiving. On the phone line with us are the folks from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Ben Stoller on the line. Thanks, Ben, for being with us. Quiet day there in Logansport?
Yep, fairly quiet day. We're still seeing pretty decent corn flow into the ethanol plant here, but overall things have quieted down.
Your base has been getting better?
Basis really has not necessarily been getting better. I would say we're strong. We're 25 over the March here for November, and we've actually faded a little bit for December, went to 30 over the March for December this afternoon.
Why was that the case?
You know, Todd, we've actually seen quite a bit of corn flow. There's been an ethanol plant to our north that has shut down, and so we've actually seen quite a bit of corn coming from the north. So really, actually, a significant flow, and our needs are more or less met.
And the soy processors in the area looking for beans?
They seem to be looking for beans. Nothing real exciting. I mean, we're seeing bean basis pop a little bit, going to, you know, around 10 over at the processors.
Okay, and your bids for the day?
Bids for tonight are 760 to Delphi, 770 to Climbers, 761 to Ibeck, and Delphi Beans, 1393.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you.
Ben Stoller from the Andersons, back in five.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
It's National Stuffing Day. By the way, stuffing goes way back. A book estimated written around the 2nd century BC has recipes for stuffed chicken, hare, and pig. Most of the early stuffings were vegetables, herbs, nuts, an ancient variety of wheat, chopped liver, and brains. On this day in agricultural history in 1849, Johann August Brunell was born, a Swedish metallurgist. He devised a rapid non-destructive test for measuring the hardness of metals. In 1867, Vladimir Ipatov was born. A Russian-born U.S. chemist, he was one of the first to investigate high-pressure catalytic reactions to hydrocarbons and devise a process for manufacturing high-octane gasoline. And in 1941, King Biscuit Time Radio was first broadcast from Helena, Arkansas. It is the longest-running daily radio program in history, broadcasting live blues music and interviews. The daily programming of Sonny Boy Williamson, Pine Top Perkins, Robert Lockwood Jr., and other Delta blues legends laid the foundation for all blues, rock, pop, and hip-hop music today. The show is named for its sponsor, King Biscuit Flour. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon, the day before Thanksgiving. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is here to look at the forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start with Thanksgiving Day. Drew, what will it be like across the nation?
Well, it looks like not too bad for many areas in the plains and the western Corn Belt, but areas to the east will probably see some showers and thunderstorms occurring. A lot of that will occur as we get into the afternoon tomorrow. We'll see a little line of showers and storms starting to form sometime during the day from Missouri over to Illinois, and then they will march their way eastward through the rest of the region as we move into tomorrow night. Behind this will be a cold air shot. We'll see the winds increase probably in the region from parts of Iowa and Wisconsin back to the Dakotas. We'll probably see wind speeds of sustained 20 to 30 miles per hour and some stronger gusts. So that's probably the biggest issue. A little bit of snow and blowing snow may occur in the upper parts of the Midwest, but I'm not expecting much in the way of significant accumulation except in Minnesota and maybe a part of eastern Dakotas where we might see a dusting to an inch or so. But the rest of the Midwest, only a change from the balmy weather we've seen here recently down to some colder conditions, but a lot of that coolness will be noted on Friday rather than tomorrow.
Right. And then are you still pretty concerned about the western part of the United States? You know, the drought monitor says we're in really tough conditions across many places there for the hard red winter wheat growing regions.
Absolutely, we are. And I do not expect that to change over these next few weeks. We may get a storm or two to occur out there, but, you know, this is the time of the year that the atmosphere doesn't hold large volumes of moisture, so it's pretty hard to get a major rain or snow event to occur that would seriously change the moisture profile. And most of the drought monitor and the long-term Palmer Drought Index are all hinged very deeply onto river and stream flows and the long-term moisture situation in the soil. So there's no way that those are going to change between now and spring. So we're going to still be in this mode. Hopefully we'll get some storm or two out there that could produce at least a little bit of better snow cover and help protect the poorly established crops and give us some potential for melting snow that would put some moisture in the topsoil early in the spring. But right now, no, I don't expect to see any real significant changes out there for these next few weeks.
Last week you told us conditions in South America had flip-flop dry and wet, Argentina and Brazil, but now things were pretty good for both places. Does that continue to be the case?
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple of exceptions. One is in west central Argentina, where it's a little bit on the dry side. They are going to get rain today into tomorrow, so hopefully that'll be a temporary fix, at least for them, if not something longer. I think they will definitely need follow-up precipitation. It's only a very small portion of Argentina's crop country. I think the only other issue there in that nation is the abundance of moisture that's still present in some of the corn country, and planting delays are still going to be occurring this week and into next week because of this new storm. And in Brazil, we're still watching the drier bias in the south that has evolved here recently. It is not critically dry, but we do have a storm system that's going to bring some rain into the region here as we go from Friday into Saturday. And if for some reason, and I think there's potential for this, that the storm ends up producing less rain than expected, we still may be concerned about the level of dryness that's evolving in the south, and we'll have to watch for that next week when we get away from the holiday.
Drew, thanks so much.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You have a great Thanksgiving. I'm Todd Gleason.